Please be seated. I have often used as a title for my Fat Sunday sermon, Fat Times and Lean Times. And I've used scripture to share my understandings that just as Charles Dickens said, it is the best of times and the worst of times. Not only that, but it will be the best of times and the worst of times, and it will be, and it will be, and it will be forever. That was brought home to me when I was looking last week through some old sermons and looking specifically for a prayer that I had used for Black History Month, and I came across a sermon from 2015. Here are some words from that sermon, 2015, Fat Sunday. It is certainly fat times and lean times today. While a shaky ceasefire agreement has been reached in the Ukraine by leaders of Russia, Ukraine, Germany, and France, U.S. intelligence officials warn that Boko Haram forces appear poised to attack in northeast Nigeria. 2015, here we are again, fat times and lean times. Even today is the fattest and the leanest. I'm so glad to have some of you back here in the sanctuary, and that happiness is countered by the sadness of missing those who we will never again see face to face in this lifetime. I am so sad by the depletion of our once large gatherings and so happy about those of you who are worshiping with us on Facebook Live, even if you're not watching us at the moment. And let me pause right here for a moment to say that part of the new church that we are constructing together, that we've been talking about for several weeks now, the church that we're building together, creating together, will be some type of virtual campus for all of you who prefer or need or just want to connect online to have meaningful and genuine connection points with us throughout the week. Fat times and lean times, it's always both, you know that, right? Your lives are microcosms of the best and worst that life has to offer pretty much all the time. Families celebrate births and mourn deaths. Families are invited to weddings and saddened by divorces. There are new jobs and lost jobs, new diagnoses, new hopes for recovery. You know all that. Because you know it, and I know it too, preaching on a day like today, Fat Sunday, can be tough. It can feel like there is no high wire on which to balance, just air and no net. It can't be all celebration. What is the pastor to preach on a day like today? Well, lots of light, of course. It's Transfiguration Sunday, too, when Jesus' inner light showed through and blinded those near him. So today I preach about the light, but not the light at the end of the tunnel, and not the light that is the silver lining in the clouds, but the light. The light that shines in the best of times and the worst of times. The light that the darkness, and there is so much of that, the darkness cannot overcome. And I need to interject here. I need you to know that when I speak of the dark, I do not speak of color. I speak of the dark in which terrible things are done. I speak of the dark under cover of which Russia invades Ukraine. I speak of the dark in which people plot and plan and politicize and posture and will not see the truth and beauty of trans kids and the parents who love them more than their own lives. I speak of the darkness in which people believe that if they just make words illegal, they will make the truth and feelings of the lives behind the words go away. Today for Fat Sunday, let me tell you a story. This story is The Doll's House by Catherine Mansfield. The Burnells were a wealthy family. They had three little girls. They were visited by Mrs. Hay, one of their distant wealthy relations. And when she left, she sent back a present to the girls that was amazing, unlike anything they had ever seen before. A doll's house. It was so big that it took two men to carry in. They couldn't even get it in the house. They set it in the courtyard. It was painted an oily spinach green, but there were bright blobs of bright yellow all around. There were four windows, real windows. They were divided into panes and everything. There was a tiny porch, and that was painted yellow, and big lumps of congealed paint hanging off the edge everywhere, but it was a perfect house. Perfect house. The hook on the side was stuck by the paint, so one of the men pried it open with his knife, and the whole house front swung back. And there you were, gazing at one and the same moment into the drawing room and the dining room and the kitchen and the bedrooms. Now that's the way for a house to open, isn't it? How much more exciting than peering through the slit of a door into a tiny little hallway? Perhaps it's the way God opens houses in the dead of night, when taking a quiet turn with an angel. But back to the house, it was too marvelous. It was too much for them. They'd never seen anything like it in their whole lives. And what Keisha liked more than anything, Keisha Burnell, what she liked frightfully was the lamp. It stood in the middle of the dining room on a table. It was all filled and ready for lighting, or at least it seemed like it was. There was something inside that tiny little lamp that moved when you shook it. So it was arranged by the adults that as long as the dollhouse stood in the courtyard, for it was too big to bring into the house, the Brunel children might ask the little girls at school to come and see it. Two by two, they could come and see it. At school, the next day, all the little girls gathered around the Burnells because they'd been told about the doll's house, but not the Kelveys. Those two little girls knew better than to come anywhere near the Brunells. They had learned this lesson. So you see, the school that all these children went to was not the kind of place that the Burnell parents would have chosen for their children if they'd had other choices. But there were no other choices. It was the only school for miles. And so all the children of the neighborhood, the judge's little girls, the doctor's daughters, the storekeeper's children, the milkman's children, were all forced to mix together. But the line on all that difference and all that acceptance had to be drawn somewhere, and so it was drawn at the Kelveys. Many of the children, including the Burnells, were not even allowed to speak to them. The Kelveys were the daughters of a hard-working washerwoman who went from house to house by day washing people's laundry. That was often awful enough, but people wondered because nobody really knew, where is Mr. Kelvey? Somebody said he was in prison. The children of a jailbird and a washerwoman. But even so, Kezia, the youngest of the Burnell children, thought that perhaps the Kelveys should see the dollhouse too. Mother, said Kezia, can't I ask the Kelveys just once? Certainly not, Kezia. But why not? You know why not. Run away. Run away, Kezia. You know very well why not. But one day, when the Kelvey girls were walking home, Kezia Burnell was outside swinging on her gate, and she got an ornery thought for just a moment, and she said to the Kelvey girls, you can come and see our doll's house if you want to. But Lil knew better. Just as she was about to say, no, we must go home, she felt a little tug on her skirt. It was the littlest Kelvey, our Else. Our Else tugged at her big sister's skirt and looked up at her with a very rare smile. And Lil couldn't say no to that smile. And she nodded her head, and the three little girls walked into the courtyard. There it is, said Kezia. There was a pause. Lil breathed loudly. Our Else was still as stone. I'll open it for you, Kezia said. She undid the hook and they looked inside. There's the drawing room and the dining room. And Kezia, how dare you ask those filthy Kelveys into the courtyard? Get out! Get out, Aunt Beryl yelled. Get out! So the Kelveys left. And when they were well out of sight of the Burnells, they sat down to rest, the two sisters close together. And in a moment, our Else had forgotten about mean Aunt Beryl. And she smiled her little rare smile again and said to her sister, I seen the little lamp. I seen the little lamp. Now imagine that the three Burnell children's names are Peter, James, and John. They're trapped in the middle of this big world full of all sorts of characters, sort of like the public school where the Burnells and Kelveys and everyone in between went to school together. They're part of that world. And dropped into this big world is a precious gift. Lamp, let's say. A light. Peter, James, and John's story goes like this in the Gospel of Luke. About 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. And suddenly, they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now, Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, Master, it's good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah, not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came down and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my child, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. I believe our Elsa's life was changed by seeing that little lamp. A bit of joy, an unexpected pleasure, beauty that was far too rare in her life. It dropped into her life, into her little life, in which she had been kept out of circles of friends and teachers' good graces. A little light dropped into her life. And she knew it meant something. So she told her sister, "I seen the little lamp. I seen it." Not so different from Peter, James, and John. Into a world of invading armies and oppressive governments and poverty of the physical and spiritual kind of like the world we live in today, into that world, God dropped this light. And they saw it. And because they were full-grown adults and not children, they faced a moment of truth. Will we tell people about this light? Couldn't we just keep it to ourselves? Would anyone believe us anyway? Is it worth the trouble? A dilemma. The poet Kathy Coffey was inspired when she and a friend walked to a mountaintop to imagine what it must have been like for Peter, James, and John when they came back down the mountain. This is her imagining. Grinding up the steep incline, our calves throbbing, we talked of problems and slapped at flies. Then you touched my shoulder, said, "Turn around." Behind us floated surprise, mountains blue on lavender, watercolored ranges, a glimpse from God's eyes. Descending, how could we chat mundanely of the weather like DJs? We wondered if, returning, James and John had squabbled. Whose turn to fetch the water after the waterfall of grace? After he imagined the shining tents, did Peter's walls seem narrow? Smell of rancid fish? Did feet that poised on Tabor cross the cluttered porch? After the bleached light, could eyes adjust to ebbing gray and shifting shade? Cradling the secret in their sleep, did they awaken cautiously, wondering if the mountaintop would gild again, bringing that voice, that face? Well, we have two jobs as I see it. One is to open wide the house, this house. Open it wide, throw back the doors, open it wide to Austin, wide to Travis County, wide to Connecticut and Arizona and South Carolina and everywhere that people gather who need to hear the good word, who need to be reminded of the light or see it for the first time. That is job one. And job two is to be brave enough to say, like our else, "I seen the little lamp." Oh, now, we don't have to use those very words. But in our time of need, God will give us the words. And you know, most of us are grown-ups, so we'll probably need to use some grown-up words. Maybe we can't just say, I seen the little lamp. But instead we say, I see you, Governor. And you are wrong. And we will protect the rights of loving parents, and we will offer safe spaces for the children who are not other, but are our own. Sometimes I seen the little lamp sounds like, I hate this mask, but I will wear it anyway because it certainly is not making the situation worse and it might make it better for you. Sometimes I seen the little lamp sounds like, I don't understand your position. In fact, it makes me kind of angry, but I will respect your right to it if it does not harm anyone. I will respect your right to it if it serves the cause of love. On a day like today, which is a day like every day, perhaps that's all God asks of us. Perhaps that is all that is needed of us. To stand in courage and say, I seen the little lamp, and the lamp shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. Amen.